Hey, welcome everybody. How you guys doing? So glad you're here this weekend, because this is a very special weekend. You know why? Because the Reveal Vineyard family is joining us online. So let's give some love up to the Reveal Vineyard family. Glad you guys are with us this weekend. And of course, here at VC, we just witness some people being water baptized. So let's congratulate those people who are just being water baptized. So cool. Such a great step in your spiritual life. You know, we're in a series right now called Always Confident. That's what I've been teaching on for the last several weeks. And in this series, we're looking at a guy in the Bible by the name of Jacob. And we found out a lot about Jacob so far. First of all, we found out that his name literally means to deceive or to manipulate or to grab the heel, which was an idiom back then that basically meant a deceiver. And we found out that Jacob has been basically stealing and lying and cheating in order to try to build for himself a successful life. I want to remind you, first of all, Jacob tricked his brother Esau into giving him the family birthright, which means that Jacob will now get 2/3 of the family inheritance. And then he tricked his dad, Isaac, into giving him the family blessing. So Jacob ends up running away from home because his brother Esau is going to kill him, and he eventually ends up having a family of his own, a dysfunctional family, but a family, and he ends up building a lot of wealth, a lot of prosperity. And so on the outside, it looks like Jacob has built a really nice life for himself. In fact, he has what so many people these days want. He has a great resume. He has great success. He has a great amount of stuff. But underneath all of that, there's this battle going on in his heart. There's this struggle that he will confront in this story today that we're going to look at. And I hope that as we look at this story today, that it'll spread some light on maybe some struggles that you might be going through as well. Now, before we get into the scripture, which, by the way, we're going to be in Genesis 32, starting in verse 4 in just a moment. Before we dive into that, though, I need to give you a little bit of background, a little bit of context of what's going on. So Jacob has run away from home, and he's living with his uncle Laban. And he's doing what Jacob always does. He's scheming, and he's deceiving. And he basically deceives his uncle into giving him the best livestock, the best of Laban's herds. And then he begins to hear rumors that Laban is actually pretty unhappy with Jacob, and that Jacob's life might even be in danger. So Jacob thinks to himself, well, where can I go? And he realizes, really, the only place he can go is the one place that he doesn't want to go. He can go back home to Israel. But if he goes back home, then he has to face the one person that he's been avoiding his entire life. He'll have to face his brother Esau. So what will happen if Jacob goes home? So Jacob wants to find out. So he first of all sends a message to his brother Esau on ahead of him. And that's where we pick up in Genesis 32, starting in verse 4. Give this message to my master Esau. Quote, humble greetings from your servant Jacob. Until now, I've been living with Uncle Laban. And now I own cattle, donkeys, flocks of sheep and goats, and many servants, both men and women. I've sent these messengers to inform my Lord of my coming, hoping that you will be friendly to me. So Jacob is always already trying to work his brother. He says, hey, I just want you to know that I've been staying this whole time with my uncle Laban. I want you to know, Esau, I haven't been hiding. I haven't been running from you. I'm not afraid. I've just been living with my uncle Laban. And by the way, I have a whole lot of stuff. I have goats and sheep and camels and donkeys, male and female servants. And so I want you to know, I'm not coming home because I need anything from you. I'm not going to try to trick you. And then he says, I'm sending this message to you, hoping that you will be friendly to me. In other words, hey man, can't we just let bygones be bygones? Can't we just let the past be in the past and forget about everything that happened many years ago? Well, the messenger goes to Esau, gives him this message. And what happens is the messenger comes back to Jacob and tells Jacob that Esau is coming to meet him and he's bringing 400 men with him. I mean, can you imagine getting that message? No, hey, we're going to have a big party when you come. Can't wait to see you. Instead, he literally comes out with an army. And so Jacob now begins to panic even more. So he decides to send an extravagant gift ahead to his brother Esau. He wants to send him a gift of goats and sheep, camels and donkeys. But again, he's scheming. And so he sends this gift in a certain way. He divides these animals up into three different groups, and he has a different herdsman lead each one of these groups. And he spreads out the groups so that each gift of animals will arrive to Esau at a separate time. So you kind of get the picture here. Look at the Bible says next, verse 20. Jacob thought, I will try to appease Esau by sending gifts ahead of me. When I see him in person, perhaps he will be friendly to me. So the gifts were sent on ahead while Jacob himself spent that night in the camp. See, Jacob is always about saving himself. That's what his life has always been about. Then look what happens next. Verse 22. During the night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two servant wives, and his 11 sons and crossed the Jabbok River with them. After taking them to the other side, he sent over all of his possessions. So Jacob is staying behind by himself. He's so concerned about his own safety that he sends his family into danger ahead of him. I mean, what kind of person would do that kind of thing? So Jacob sends his family first, and he's left all alone. He's given everything away. There's nothing else that he can do. There are no more tricks that he can play. And that is when something happens that changes his life forever. Look at verse 24. This left Jacob all alone in the camp. And a man came and wrestled with him until the dawn began to break. When the man saw that he would not win the match, he touched Jacob's hip and wrenched it out of its socket. Then the man said, "Let me go, for the dawn is breaking." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." "What is your name?" the man asked. He replied, "Jacob." "Your name will no longer be Jacob," the man told him. "From now on, you will be called Israel, because you have fought with God and with men and have won." "Please tell me your name," Jacob said. "Why do you want to know my name?" the man replied. Then he blessed Jacob there. Jacob named the place Peniel, which means face of God, for he said, "I've seen God face to face, yet my life has been spared." The sun was rising as Jacob left Peniel, and he was limping because of the injury to his hip. Now, Jacob's life can basically be divided into two chapters. His life before the fight and his life after the fight. His life before the limp and his life after the limp. And Jacob's life before the fight could basically be summarized by the phrase self-sufficiency. Self-sufficiency. Say that out loud. Self-sufficiency. Say it one more time. Self-sufficiency. Are you guys at Reveal saying that? Pastor Marty, make sure that they're saying that out loud, all right? All right. I wanted you to say that because that's going to come back into play because this is all about self-sufficiency. I want to remind you, Jacob is part of a God-ordained family. Jacob, his whole life, had been taught to talk to God, to think about God, to pray to God, and yet his life was motivated by his own strengths, his own schemes, his own plans. Jacob always had a way out. He always had a lie. See, Jacob believed in God, but he relied on himself. And you know what? That is so true of so many people these days. So many people these days believe in God, and yet they rely on themselves. Even Christians, lots of Christians. Do you do that? Do you really rely on yourself instead of really relying on God? You know, I read an article about today's average Christian. And the article described the average Christian in America as basically someone who probably came to faith as a child, either through their family or maybe through some sort of church experience. And so they got a concept of God embedded into their worldview. But as they grow up, success and self-reliance become the basic motivators of their life. Which means, other than the fact that they might be involved in some kind of religious activity from time to time, their lives don't actually look any different than anybody else. See, it's possible to believe in God, to talk to God, to go to church, and yet be totally self-sufficient. It's possible to believe that there is a God, and yet when difficulty comes or trouble comes, the person you trust in the most is you. That is Jacob. That's his story. And I'll bet it might be some of your story as well. And this is where we find out that God actually has something to say about this. There's a deeper struggle that's going on here. So the text says that a man shows up and picks a fight with Jacob. Now, some Old Testament scholars say that this man who shows up here in Genesis 32 is some kind of an angel. Other Old Testament scholars say that this man here is actually God himself. That this is what theologians call a theophany, a visible manifestation of God. But either way, what we see here is that there's a struggle beneath the struggle. Jacob realizes in that moment that his battle, his struggle, is not really with Esau. His struggle is not really with Uncle Laban. His struggle is not really with his family. His struggle is not even with himself. What Jacob finds out is that his real struggle is with God. His real struggle is with God. In fact, later the prophet Hosea, he put it like this: even in the womb, Jacob struggled with his brother. When he became a man, he even fought with God. In other words, in his adult life, in all of his struggles, there was this other struggle that was going on inside of him. Let me pause for a moment. Ask you, what struggles do you happen to have in your life right now? What battles, what problems, what situations do you have going on that you're really struggling with right now? I want to tell you as your pastor that maybe there's a struggle underneath that struggle. Maybe there's something else going on that's not really about your circumstances. You think it's about your circumstances, but that's not really what it's about. No, maybe what you're experiencing is something that's trying to get your attention. And what it's really about is who you trust. Who you trust. It's really about who you think is in control. Because the fact is, when you think you are in control, then God is oftentimes going to start a fight with you. And that's what he does with Jacob. And I want you to notice the timing here in Jacob's life. Jacob is all alone. He sent everybody across the river. He's all alone. He's by himself. He's feeling depleted. He's feeling empty. And at this point in his life, Jacob is an older man. He's almost 100 years old. So he's almost as old as Pastor Mario. And God shows up and he picks a fight with Jacob. He shows up and wrestles with him. He shows up and actually wounds him. You know, so often we think that God is the one who should come and take away all of our pain, take away all of our struggles, all of our problems. You know, sometimes we think of God as almost like a drug, where we could just take a little God and he'll get rid of all of our pain. Some of you might know the writing of an author named Brené Brown. She's an amazing writer and researcher, mainly on vulnerability and shame. And one time she talks about going through a midlife crisis in her life, and so she decided that she was going to go back to church. And she did that because all the research that she had personally done earlier before said that when a person hits a midlife crisis, one of the things that really helped them was by going back to church. So she decided she was going to go back to church, but she was really nervous about it. In fact, she said this, "I don't really want to dress up. I'm not sure what's going to happen. I don't really want to meet new people, and I don't want to go to a place with the name Jesus in it. Maybe a saint, but certainly not Jesus in the name." And then she goes back to church. And she went to church a few times, and she said this, it's profound. She says, "I was hoping that I'd find a God who could almost be like a drug, a God who would take away the pain. But what I found is that God was saying to me, maybe life is supposed to be hard. Maybe it's going to be a fight. Maybe it's going to be a battle. Maybe it's going to be a struggle." See, I want you to know, part of the reason why life at times is so hard and so challenging is because redemption is hard. Spiritual growth is hard. Love is hard. Faith is hard. And if anybody tries to tell you anything different, they're trying to sell you a bill of goods. Because walking with Jesus is hard. You just need to know that up front. When you give your life to Jesus, man, what's coming is going to be hard. It's going to be the best, but it's not going to be easy. And what Jacob discovers here is that his self-sufficiency has to die. It has to die. And maybe that's what you need to discover. Maybe you realize that you've been way too self-sufficient. And if that's the case, I want you to know there's probably going to be a fight that comes into your life. And in fact, I think that's a fight that all of us as followers of Jesus are going to have to deal with from time to time. I know it's a fight that I have to deal with from time to time. You know, oftentimes for me, when things get really hard for me, what I'll oftentimes do is I'll turn to my own strengths, my own ability, my own will, in order to try to get through this on my own. And what I'm really doing is I'm trusting myself instead of trusting in God. And that's never a good thing to do. And when we start doing that, eventually God's going to pick a fight with us. He's going to come and wrestle us. And the truth is, for all of us, our self-sufficiency has to die. That has to happen. And that's the thing that divides Jacob's life into these two parts. And when Jacob realizes this, it's amazing. Because this is when Jacob actually starts to pray. This is when his conversations with God change dramatically. Let me ask you another question. Do you ever feel like you're kind of bored with prayer? Do you ever feel like, you know, prayer is just not that interesting? I just don't really have a whole lot of time to pray. You know, I think if we're honest with ourselves, I think all of us, from time to time at least, feel that way. There's another writer by the name of Ben Patterson. He said this: whenever you're bored with prayer, it's probably a sign that God is bored too. Because it means you're not really talking to him. It means you're not being real. It means you're not really at the real part of the struggle between you and him, between who's really in charge. Now, when this happens with Jacob, something different comes out of his mouth. Look at verse 26. Then the man said, "Let me go, for the dawn is breaking." Now remember, the man is an angel or God himself. "Let me go, the dawn is breaking." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." I mean, the man who's been holding on to everything in his life, his strength, his success, his reputation, all of his material goods, holding on to those things with the utmost strength that he can. Now he says, "God, I'm not going to let you go unless you bless me." See, Jacob finds himself clinging to the one thing that he has, and that's God. He has nothing left, nothing else left. And it's ironic. You know, Jacob sent all of his stuff, all of his family, all of his stuff across the river, and he's there by himself. And it's such a picture of what's always been true in his life. But he didn't know it. Jacob's always been alone. He just didn't know it. He was always at risk. He was always vulnerable. And so that's why he held on to his stuff so tightly, thinking, "My stuff will get me through this." But now that he has no stuff, he's clinging to the one thing that he has. He's clinging as hard as he can onto God. And see, that is what faith is all about. In fact, if you're sort of new to faith, new to the church, maybe you're not sure what it's all about, this is at the core of it. Faith is not something we achieve out of strength. It's something we discover when we have nothing else to hold on to. See, when our problems are too great, when our pain is too much, when our shame is too big, when we have nothing left, that is when faith begins. In fact, I love how someone else put this. They said this, you'll never know that God is all you need until God is all you have. How true this is for Jacob. You'll never know that God is all you ever really need until God is all you really have. And the fact is this, God is going to wrestle with us. He is. He's going to battle us. He will fight us until we get to the place of relying on Him and Him alone. And that is what so many struggles in life are really all about. What are we holding on to? I love how God responds to Jacob's prayer. Look at verse 27. What is your name? The man asked. He replied, Jacob. Your name will no longer be Jacob, the man told him. From now on, you will be called Israel. Underline Israel. You will be called Israel because you have fought with God and with men and have won. I mean, the man who used to be the master of his own fate, he thought, is now the one holding on desperately to God and God alone. And I want you to think about this. This name Israel, because God's people are forever defined by this. You know, God's people are not the people of Abraham. God's people are not the people of Jacob. I mean, the people of Israel. I'm getting messed up. I was going to say Isaac. They're not the people of Isaac. God's people are not the people of Adam. God's people throughout the ages have been called the people of Israel. We are the people who struggle with God and with man, and we win. See, that's who we are. That's our legacy. That is the church. And so we're not just here holding on to our stuff and then asking God to help us keep it. That's not why we're here. No, we're here as followers of Jesus because we have nothing else to hold on to. Not really. Not really. And then the other thing that happens to Jacob, the Bible says, is that he gets a limp. He not only gets a new name, it's going to be called Israel, but he gets a limp. And that means that when he's going to go out and meet his brother Esau, he's not going out in strength. He's going in weakness. He's limping. He's vulnerable. And you would think that that would make Jacob's life worse, right? You would think that that would sort of be the end of him. But what's so amazing about this story is his limp is what actually saves him. Because the text goes on to say that when Esau saw Jacob limping to come out and meet him, then Esau ran to him to meet him. And he embraced him, and he kissed him, and they wept together. You know, it's interesting that Jacob thought he could buy or manipulate or scheme his way through life. But the one thing that really saved him was vulnerability. It was his limp that saved him. It was his weakness that saved him. Now, the truth is, we don't really like this part of the story because we don't want to have a limp. We don't want to be vulnerable. But I want you to know, having a limp is actually a very good thing. In fact, John Wimber, the late leader of the Vineyard Movement, he used to tell us all the time, never trust a leader without a limp. In other words, God does something through our limps that he never does through our strengths. He works wonders through our limps. Do you have a limp of some kind? Do you have an area of your life that's a weakness of some kind? And you know that it is? It's just part of your limp? I do. I want to tell you as your pastor, don't rely on your strengths to walk with God. Rely on your limp. Rely on your limp. That's what the Apostle Paul was saying in 2 Corinthians 12 when he said, that's why I take pleasure in my weaknesses and in the insults, hardships, persecutions, and troubles that I suffer for Christ. Then he said this, for when I am weak, when I have a limp, that's when I'm strong. And you know what? That's true for us. It's true for us too. So in this story, a man came and wrestled with Jacob until dawn. 2,000 years ago, another man came from heaven to wrestle with humanity and fight us and fight for us. And he eventually ended up giving his life on a cross. And he held on to God the Father. And he said, I'll not let you go unless you bless me. And 3 days later, God the Father blessed him and raised him from the dead so that you and I could have life. I want you to know, man, there's going to be a struggle. This life of following Jesus is not easy. It's not comfortable. It's going to be hard. It's going to be a fight. It's going to be painful at times. But here's the thing. Success, quote unquote, is not going to fix you. It's not. The thing that's going to fix you is surrender. Surrender. So right now, I want to invite you to do that. In your own words, in your own way. And I want to make this real practical for you. I'm going to give you 4 words that you can say in an act of surrender. No matter what story you might face right now, no matter what situation or circumstance you might be in. And those 4 words are, God, I need you. God, I need you. Say that out loud. God, I need you. One more time. God, I need you. Reveal. God, I need you. You know, I don't know what's going on in your life. Maybe you're at a moment in your marriage where it's just really hard. God, I need you. Maybe you're in a situation with your finances, with your career, with your work. You're just really struggling. You're not sure what the future holds. What do? God, I need you. You know, maybe for some of you, your life on the outside looks really good right now, really good. Everybody around you think it's going really good. But deep inside of you, you're feeling a lot of loneliness, feeling a lot of pain, a lot of challenges, a lot of struggle. Your self-sufficiency's run out. What do you need? You need those 4 words. God, I need you. See, that's the battle. That's the fight. And it takes all of our will and all of our effort to let everything else go and just hold on to God with all we have.